You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Launching a new university to rival and even outdo the United States Ivy League institutions might sound like a somewhat fanciful, not to mention expensive, endeavour. And nonetheless, the Minerva project aims to do just that, while at the same time charging just 50% of elite institutions' tuition fees and offering students the chance to study in six cities around the world over the course of their studies. I'm joined by Ben Nelson, who is CEO and founder of the Minerva project. We did cover this in the Times Higher, but for the benefit of those people who didn't see that piece, perhaps you could just start by taking us through what a Minerva student would do, how Minerva University would work.
Sure. So Minerva is constructed effectively to be an ideal university. It's what we think of as creating the perfect learning environment for extraordinarily high potential, intellectually curious, mature and adventurous students that want something more from their undergraduate offering than they can find at existing universities. So Minerva is not for everyone. Our admission standards are the most rigorous in the world. Not only do we look for extraordinary Ivy League caliber, Oxbridge caliber grades, but we also have our own series of assessments and our own interview process that we put students through, that they have to get through in order to be offered admissions. The difference is that unlike a traditional university, and outside of our founding year, which is the 2014, which is a very small group of 19 students, but beginning in the fall of 2015, we won't have any kind of cap on admissions, which means that if you qualify for Minerva, we will offer you a spot at the university, which means that there's no wait list, that there are no quotas and games of, oh, we have too many people from, you know, so-and-so country or so-and-so region, etc. We don't care who your parents are. We don't care about all of those issues that don't speak to your merit and your merit alone. Mm-hmm. And for us, that's extremely important. When you get to Minerva, the curriculum is both more classical in its orientation and much more advanced. So classical in the sense that in a traditional American university, Ivy League, etc., you are supposed to learn, and the presidents of those universities will tell you that they teach you these critical thinking skills, how to be a leader, how to look and analyze at situations, how to communicate effectively. The problem is that if you look at the curriculum, there's nothing in the curriculum that actually teaches you those things on purpose. You go and you take a series of courses, and you're supposed to pick up those skills effectively in the process of studying something else. Minerva is structured in such a way that we created a freshman year around critical analysis, creative thinking, and effective communication skills. And those are the elements that comprise the subjects of our freshman year core curriculum. All of our students go through that. And when they get into their sophomore year and take advanced courses, there are no introductory level courses at Minerva at all. When they take their advanced courses, they exercise and apply those elements to those classes. 100% of our classes are seminars. They're capped at 19 students per course. And we teach all of these courses via live video because we want to be able to build from one class to another, capture the data that occurs in the class, allow the professors to assess you, and pass you on from one to another. Mm-hmm. Because of that, we also get to rethink the student experience day-to-day. And so rather than confining students and faculty to a particular campus, what we do is we have the students spend their freshman year in San Francisco, and then they break up into groups of 150, and those cohorts will live in six different cities over the next six semesters all over the world. Mm-hmm. So that is Minerva in a very quick nutshell.
Sure, sure. I mean, it sounds quite an expensive way to study, to fly around the world to different bases. I mean, I've heard people say, is this just another university for the elites, you know, people who can afford to pay for that travel, people who can afford to give up their hometown and head off to these wonderful cities and learn. How is this not going to exclude a large percentage of people who want to go to, you know, a quote unquote elite institution?
Right. So it certainly sounds like, you know, traveling from city to city is the glamour of it, and the, you know, and you have this image of the expense of it. But if you look at a typical American degree, your cost is $40,000 of tuition plus almost $20,000 additionally in room and board, insurance, your fees for books and all of those things that really are outside of a university's direct control. So that $60,000 a year across 4 years is a quarter of a million U.S. dollars, mm-hmm. right? That is an enormous amount of money. And it doesn't include the cost of actually getting to campus, right? And so if you're a student who's in Liverpool and you want to attend Harvard or Penn or Stanford, well, guess what? You have to fly to Boston or Philadelphia or San Francisco at the beginning of the year. You fly back for winter break, and then you fly back at the beginning of spring semester and fly back at the end of spring semester. Well, you'll do the exact same thing with Minerva, except every year, rather than flying into one city, you'll fly into that city your freshman year, but sophomore year you may fly from Liverpool to San Francisco, you'll fly from Liverpool to Berlin. Mm-hmm. And maybe the spring semester you'll fly to Istanbul, maybe the semester after that to Mumbai. And so the actual net cost difference in the flight is negligible. But the real difference is our philosophy on access and cost. So even though we can't do anything about the cost of living and eating and insurance and things like that, and for that we're roughly comparable with other universities, our tuition is actually a quarter of the tuition at a traditional private American university. It's actually lower than the tuition at most Great British universities. Our tuition is $10,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And so altogether, the cost of Minerva are well under half of the traditional American university. But from a tuition perspective, it's a quarter. So we save students right off the bat $120,000 in total in attending the university. Mm-hmm. On top of that, we are working on programs to create low-interest student loans for any student, no matter where they're from, as well as scholarships for students who are of particularly high need.
I mean, it sounds like a huge saving, £120,000, but what you're paying for with that investment, arguably, is an established, reputable, well-known, respected university. If you get a degree from Oxford, Cambridge, MIT, Harvard, Stanford, it speaks for itself. I mean, but what makes you think that a university launched from scratch by someone who has a background in social media, really, more than in academia, will be able to carry the same weight for those first graduating students when they put their Minerva certificate on an employer's desk?
Right. Well, so there are different aspects to it. So there's no question that it won't have the same perspective for people, because when somebody goes to a Harvard or Oxford or Cambridge, everybody knows those institutions, and there is an assumption of what those institutions come. Having said that, Minerva is quite well known. It's been covered all over the world. We've had student interest from 99 different countries, and it will continue to be so. And what Minerva will bring to those students is a mark that they did do something different, that they went and experienced a level of education that they can't get at a traditional university, have a student experience that they can't get at a traditional university. And so for those who will know about Minerva, and it is our job to make sure that the world does know about Minerva more and more, and word will spread about the university substantially over the next 6 years by the time our first students graduate, there will be an underlying infrastructure that will be highly accommodating to those students.
Mm-hmm. And how are you developing your syllabuses? How is the communal, as I alluded to there, you're not an academic yourself.
Correct. And I'm not the one to bother them, yes.
I know you have a board of is it trustee or
advisors.
Yes. Who's involved, and how are you ensuring the educational rigor of your courses?
So the founding dean of the Minerva Schools, Minerva is incubated within KGI, which is one of the Claremont University Consortium members, one of the Claremont colleges, which is the most innovative a part of higher education and the high end of American higher education, with schools like Pomona and Harvey Mudd, Claremont McKenna, some of the finest liberal arts colleges in the world. And KGI is hosting, incubating the Minerva Schools. And so when somebody gets that Minerva degree, they get it not just from the Minerva Schools, they get them from the Minerva Schools at KGI. The leader of the Minerva Schools at KGI is a professor named Stephen Costlin. Stephen was the dean of social science at Harvard. He was recruited out of Harvard by Stanford to run perhaps the world's most prestigious center for social science, the Center for Advanced Studies in Behavioral Science. And we recruited him out of Stanford to lead up the Minerva Schools. He is hiring four divisional deans to create the four cornerstone syllabi that he's working alongside with. So the first dean that we have announced is a guy named Dan Levitin. Dan is the top-selling science author of the last decade. He wrote This Is Your Brain on Music. He's one of the world's foremost cognitive neuropsychologists, but also is a musician. And he will be leading our School of Arts and Humanities, which shows that we really try to bring individuals from across disciplines. And so Stephen, Dan, and their colleagues, who will be some of the finest professors in the world, are the ones that are constructing the syllabi and the entire educational program at Minerva.
Mm. Ultimately, of course, it will be fees that fund the project. But in the build-up to your first cohort,
yes,
which is only going to be 19 anyway,
yes, yes.
Presumably wouldn't bring in mega books. How are you funding it? Where's your investment come from?
Right. Well, the first 19 actually go for free, so they even get a better deal than the standard, because we're asking so much of them. Which is why it's very very small number of students. So they go tuition free, and we pay for their housing in the first year. The funding for Minerva comes from a group called Benchmark Capital, and Benchmark is extremely well known in Silicon Valley. They are they're perhaps the premier venture capital firm in Silicon Valley. They were the first backers of eBay. One of their partners is the only venture representative on Twitter's board that is now filing to go public. They were the first investors in Uber and Instagram and Snapchat. So many of the great internet brands that you know of. But they've also invested in a number of companies that are in spaces that give back both in education and enterprise and others that are not as well known from a consumer brand perspective, but have had a substantial impact.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And is there, are those people with a very vested interest in the success of Minerva going to be as concerned about the educational rigor as you are? I mean, you clearly are. They're there to make a profit. They want as many students going to Minerva as possible so they can get as much money back.
Well, actually, this is the brilliant thing about Benchmark Capital. Benchmark has investors that realize that the number of students that come to Minerva don't necessarily equate with the value of the enterprise. Right? The value of leading enterprises comes from their ability to be leaders, the leader in their field. Right? The enterprise value of any kind of institution is largely dependent on the value of its brand as opposed to just the quantity of customers or profits that they generate. Mm-hmm. You can look at a very different sector, but look at Amazon as an example. Amazon produces no profit whatsoever. They're a 20-year-old company. It doesn't produce profit at all. Yet they are a dramatic innovator in e-commerce, and they have a fantastic brand. And that brand is what accounts for the value of that enterprise. So Benchmark understands that actually getting the most students is not our goal. We want to educate as many brilliant students as we can find, but our standards are such that if we ever compromise our standards to bring in an incremental student, the damage to the value of what we're creating is so great that it never makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And to have that alignment between our investors and ourselves that are operating the institution is really, really important.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Amazon there. I mean, it strikes me when the music industry went through its digital upheaval, it was Apple, not an existing music firm, that sort of drove a lot of the change, and now is not a monopoly, but I think it sells about 80% of the legal downloads online. And if you look across, you know, all the internet monopolies, Amazon, Google, YouTube, they weren't already active in those areas.
Right.
For publishing, Amazon brought the Kindle out, and suddenly all the existing publishers are caught a little bit on the hop, arguably. Yeah. Why do you think it takes you with your brand new university to create this sort of upheaval? Why doesn't an existing university do what it is you're doing, and would they not have a better shot anyway with the reputation that they've already accrued?
Well, absolutely. They would have a better option if they could do it from right off the bat. And in fact, Minerva started 20 years ago when I was a freshman at the University of Pennsylvania, trying to reform the University of Pennsylvania. That is how I got the passion to do this. The difficulty is not actually in the will of the leadership of these institutions to change. It is substantial. In fact, I will leave the name of the individual off the record, but I've met with many presidents, provosts, vice chancellors of universities, and I've had a number of them basically say that if they could, they would provide a Minerva type of education. My favorite quote was when one of them said that he has curriculum envy, and so it's not that they don't want to enact change; it's that the structure of a university is such that you can't just take one little component and change it in a vacuum. Right, and so I'll give you an example. Right, now with a lot of the education technology that's coming out, people are saying, "Oh, we can flip the classroom." Right, we can finally do your work outside of class and then come into class to actually engage in discussion. Well, guess what? 70 years ago, all classrooms in the top American higher education were flipped. Right, you went home, you did your homework, you came in, and the professor would jump down your throat and interrogate you. Right, they would actually engage you. Well, what happened is grade inflation. Right, grade inflation was such that students realized that they didn't have to do work at home; they could just come to class. And if the professor, saw that he didn't know anything, rather than saying, "Okay, you're flunked and you're out of the class," he would say, "Okay, well, let me tell you what happened." Right, and so what happened was that there was this shift away from the flipped classroom, quote unquote, because of grade inflation. So now, a university that wants to flip a classroom, it's not about technology, you could read the book, but whatever, maybe the video makes it a little bit better. Flipped classrooms will not work unless you solve the problem of grade inflation. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. So university says, okay, you know what, we'll do both. We'll flip the classroom and we'll get rid of grade inflation. Well, guess what? In an American university context, if you get rid of grade inflation in these top schools, you can kiss your football program goodbye, right? Now, these kids are recruited for their ability to play football, and some of them are truly Ivy League caliber, but some of them are not, right? But they have full-time jobs, right? So assume that they were at the very top caliber, right? Their amount of strain that is put on them just in going through their athletic activities is such that they can't possibly go through a really rigorous education and pass with flying colors. Okay, well, so the university can say, okay, well, I'll flip the classroom, I'll get rid of grade inflation, I'll get rid of, athletics. Okay, well, you can kiss $250 million of annual contributions goodbye, right? Because, the athletic programs are... And so what happens is you have a structural problem, right, that without having a systemic change in higher education... will make it such that these universities will kind of shrug their shoulders and say, you know what, why change? What's the point? Everything is going well. Let's just keep on going. And that's when innovation comes from the outside. Now, our hope is that we're innovating in such a way that it doesn't require the flipped classroom, it doesn't require kind of these systemic issues. We want universities to embrace again the concept of curriculum. Right, and whether or not we are the ones that they copy that curriculum from, or that they just react to it, right? That we're the ones that have that inspire them to come up with their own curriculum. We want them to embrace that concept again, and I believe that if we're out there and successful, right, and we are the ones that are able to actually put together an educational program that does provide a better education for students, that does provide them better outcomes, then other universities will follow us. And that's our hope.
I take it Minerva doesn't have athletic scholarships.
We do not.
Well, Ben Nelson, founder and CEO of the Minerva Project, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.